You are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network, coming to you from the heart of the Q in Quitman, Mississippi.
Old Men Stories, a show just about old men? Not hardly. It's a name that conjures up the image of someone who's been through it all, seen it all, and survived it all, like the storytellers of old. That wisdom comes with age. But all age is relative. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be male. You just have to live the story and survive to tell the tale. Join Master Storytellers Roland Willits and Jeff Young now as we start today's journey.
Bopping at the byway, looking for the old man of our day. I'm looking for the stories back in their days of glory, just to see what those old men have to say. And I'm looking for the stories of our land. I'm looking for them everywhere I can. Old men stories are the reason, and I'll listen any season. I'll search for these old men across the land. Yes, I'll search for these old men across the land.
Roland Willits.
Jeff Young.
Old Men Stories. Welcome to our show. During our 127th show, we go to our gardens and dig around for stories. Everyone has thought about doing a garden, but very few actually have gardens every year. If you count a pot in the window a garden, the numbers increase. Are we stretching it to add indoor plants? Whatever experience you have with gardens, you can think of a great story. So just do a little cultivating from your past to properly garden a old man's story.
Good afternoon, everyone, from Fremont, California, and Paducah, Kentucky. It's Old Man Stories, the show that grows on you. We're talking about gardening today, as you heard. And Roland, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jeff. And it's raining outside, so that's one of the main ingredients in having nice plants. I was in the desert, and they didn't have as many.
Now, we've had shows in the past where we've talked about farming and tractors. I guess the first question I have for you is, have you ever worked at growing things on a farm?
Yes, I have. I spent one whole summer on a farm with my family. Yeah, I have family, the Bouchers up in Crookston, Minnesota. They have a lot of land up there, and they sent me by bus up there for one summer, and I spent the whole summer up there on the farm, and I worked in the gardens, and I worked in the fields. They had me going, you know, 10 hours a day work. So I had a wonderful learning experience on a farm.
How would you contrast it to gardening? Is there much of a difference other than scale?
Oh, yes. Total difference. Total difference. When you garden, usually you go out there, you sit in the hole, you do small things. I did. I mean, they had me going out and doing hoeing, which was, you know, hoeing with some of the cornfields. And that's like gardening. To me, gardening is hoeing and then hoeing and then hoeing and then hoeing. So when you get done with that, you hoe some more. But you plant at the beginning, that only takes like, you know, an hour and a half, and you're all done planting, and when you pick it, that gets done pretty fast. It's the middle time that you know, you have to keep cleaning around the plants, because my aunt loved to have a weed-free garden.
Yeah, that's the thing about gardening, which I never quite understood. You spend a lot of time growing stuff that you want and a lot of time pulling up the stuff that you didn't want, namely weeds. And it's like the weeds grow up no matter what you do. But the plants you want don't necessarily do unless you make an effort to put them there.
Yes, and we can't eat weeds normally. Well, actually, you know, I mean, we could put in salad some of them.
Yeah, there are some edible weeds and some questionably edible plants. But I can say that one of my best memories of gardening were back when I was living in New York, and in the brownstone two-story apartment on First Pond Road in Ridgewood, and in the back, everyone had a little backyard that ran maybe 60 feet.
Oh.
And depending on who it was, and because up on the second floor where we lived, you could see other neighbors' yards, and some people just let it grow wild and had weeds. Other people had a lawn back there they could do barbecues on. My grandmother, who lived in the first floor apartment with my grandfather, had a vegetable garden that she used to supplement their groceries.
Oh.
And for the most part, she grew string beans in the garden outside. And there was this walkway that she made to get to the tree in the back, which had, like, I think tomatoes. I'm not sure. But it's been several years, obviously. But I remember the walkway because it was made up out of recycled soda cans, dirt on either side, and then you had a little path down the middle. And I thought it was really creative that she did that. And I was always poking at the cans to see if they'd come loose. But her crowning creation were the Chinese winter melons that grew on vines. And she had them growing on the trellis that formed the back porch of the brownstone. So when you came out of the basement doors into the backyard, you would be surrounded by these giant-sized hanging winter melons. She used to water them every day, except when she got sick, and then she had us do it. But also, the butcher shop that was on the ground floor, the butcher was a family friend, and so since he had the back door right out of the back of the shop, he would also occasionally water them because it looked kind of dry. So they would have these winter melons year-round, easily the size of your arm, or so it seemed when I was a kid. And they would make winter melon soup every time you got sick, because that is one of those restorative vegetables that you have in soup besides chicken. You would think that gardening would be in my blood, especially in light of the fact that my grandmother used to grow aloe vera plants, spider plants, and everything else. And every day, she would go around the house with her green watering can and water all the plants. And I'll come back to that story in a little bit. But as for me, I did not do very well with gardening. I was put in charge of watering the itty-bitty tomato plants in third grade, and I think I killed them because they never grew. And when Mom put me in charge of watering the plants around the house, they didn't last very long either. I think I overwatered them rather than underwatering them, to be truthful. And it's kind of funny because at home, I live in a place that doesn't have a backyard. That's more than concrete anyway. And we have one plant, a very large spider plant, that will not die however little you water it. And it is not my plant. It just refuses to die. And we've given people cuttings from this plant. And they say, this plant has grown up into a giant-sized monster thing, and we never water it, or almost never, and it will not die. So I'm wondering if it's got something to do with being kudzu or something. Who knows? All we know is that despite my best efforts to kill this particular plant by neglecting it, it doesn't die. My grandmother on my mom's side also was a consummate gardener, although it was more flowering plants, and she would always have house plants everywhere in the house. There'd be one near the window in the dining room in the front of the house in the kitchen. There'd be two on the kitchen windowsill, one in her bedroom, two on the coffee table in the living room. And then there was the century plant in the back corner of the living room that went from floor to ceiling. And the bits at the top were these just spiky leaves, and it would just sit there with just these little leaves at the top, and the leaves just kind of kind of mushed up against the ceiling until the top bent slightly. But that plant had been there for easily 30 years. And then one summer, it essentially blossomed with these little white spiky bits on the top. And the joke was, oh, it finally decided to bloom. It's supposedly a century plant. It must be every 100 years. I wonder if this plant's 100 years old or something. She passed away last year. The comment was, what are we going to do with that giant tree in the living room? And I'm not sure where it went. All I know is that that was one of her personal legacies. And for whatever reason, I didn't inherit the gardening skills of either of my grandparents. Cooking skills, yes. Gardening skills, no. Roland.
Well, now you're getting to a person that can't keep plants alive because I get distracted. I have been quite fortunate to always live around people that were great waterers and plant carers. My wife, Terry, she always has houseplants around, and they always keep living. And we had one plant, like your spider plant, that kept growing and growing. And we'd cut it off and give it to someone. You put it in water for a little while, and then it would grow and grow, and you'd give that to someone. It would grow and grow and grow and grow. That was cool. Like I say, if we call that gardening, we had a garden. But I always think of gardening, of getting something out that you grow to eat. Now, for plants, I did plant some rose bushes, tree roses, and they were called Double Delights. I absolutely loved them. And I took care of them for years and years, and then all of a sudden, I got disinterested, and I had the gardener start taking care of them, and then they didn't flourish as much. And then we have what you call, moles that are in the ground. And they seem to like the roots of my rose trees. So was their demise. We tried to get rid of the moles. We tried everything, and the moles won. Do you have any moles?
I could talk about the star-nosed mole that bit my kid brother on a camping trip, but that's for another day.
Okay.
I used to go camping a lot, so definitely there are some good wild animal stories there.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we were young. He used to, for few years, she planted a garden out in the backyard, but the soil wasn't really good. You know, we got a few plants off it, but, you know, we didn't have a fence around the yard. And if you have a garden without a fence, it's open territory for people coming down the alley. You know, when something is ready to eat and they see it, it sort of disappears off the plant. You know, after a few years, Ma found she could go down to National Tea and get food cheaper just from getting it there. And then we would get it from the farms. So we would drive out to the farms and get tomatoes out of the farms, and she'd bring it home, and then they would can it. Did you ever can?
No, but I've helped make plum preserves.
There you go. See, you did a little
canning.
They would have us help with that stuff. We would have to take all the tomatoes in, and then we would have to take off all of the anything that was around the tomato. It had to be perfectly clean, and then wash them, and then again, we'd have to get them all set out, and then at a certain spot, our mother, my mom, and all her cohorts would take over, and they would cook it. They would cook it in big, big pots. And then they would, and after they got to that, they would put it in glass jars in ball, I think it was called, jars. And then they would, after that, they would put the covers on. They would boil it. They would boil these in these other big pots, and they'd put the jars in it until it was really hot, and then seal it. And that would last all year long. There weren't very many bad ones that came on. But that was the canning part of it. Now, see, I didn't do much of the canning part. I remember the hoeing. I mean, you're going to get me talking about the hoeing the whole time. Because,
the what?
You know, different kinds of hoes for hoeing, for doing
okay.
That. There's these little ones that have they're sort of like a triangle, you know?
Right.
And they got those, and they got big ones that, they're sort of round, and on the bottom it's right angles, and you know,
sort of
the
sort of a twide hole.
And, yeah, it's sort of like a standard hole. Yeah, like a standard hole.
Okay.
And you can use those, and those are the ones I know. Those are the ones you can buy like by the dozen, because I found out when I was hoeing that I broke one, and I said, oh. They're just going to have to, you know, not have me hoe for a while. And they brought me to the shed, and I looked inside, and they had, like, 20 hoes in there. And I said, well, I can't get away with that, Roland. So, I just gave up and hoed with what they have. They have some. They had, like, these three barb things that sort of went around in a angle. And at the end, they had little base, like, what do they call it, the spade cards, and then you could do that, and you go around all of the bushes and all everything with that, and that worked pretty good. And let's see, any other kind of spades. There were two or three others that we used. So they had a whole bunch of different tools that they had me out in the field working with. And then, I told you I worked in a nursery, right?
No, you have not.
Oh, I worked in a nursery for 2 summers. Which is nursery, and they didn't have any garden, but they did sell all the plants for gardens. Actually, Rose Bush had a garden. That's the lady that, one of the owners of the place, Rose Bush. And she had a garden, I never went out in it, never helped with it. She just, it was her own and in the family, and they took care of it. But I did help. Plant the little tomato plants and get them all ready in these little, they have them in like little square pots. They're about 2 inches high and about 1.5 inches on each side. And you'd take them out of big flats and put them in those little things. And then they would just take those out and plant them, and they would just sort of rot. You just sort of plant the whole little container. And that was fancy ones. And what they would have for the different plants is they would have them, they would start them early, and they would charge different amounts for the size of the plant. In other words, if a plant was only about 1.5 inches, they would be really cheap. But if the plant was about, you know, 6 inches or 7 inches, man, they charge a bundle. But on the other side of it, those plants would start producing fruit like 3 weeks early, and so they get a huge amount of fruit out of it before the end of the season. It's still the same way. You know, you go to a nursery and you find plants the same way. I don't think they've changed much at all in nurseries since I was doing it over a half century ago.
Yeah, in my geocaching wanderings, found a park that was on the site of a plum drying center, and they had some of the plum drying carts and trays sitting out there as a historical preservation for what was in that spot, and the pictures and photos and everything. And it was kind of neat. And some people who aren't from this area, like myself originally, don't know that California was very big on farming back before it became Silicon Valley, especially this area. So it's kind of interesting to kind of look at what has happened to this area over time, where there'd be lots of orchards and lots of different fields, things like that. I have to say that the most interesting thing that I found in my travels has to be the pizza farm in Fresno. And what this is, and one of the closest one to me is Cobb Ranch in Fresno, California. But the idea is that, seen from the air, it is a circular farm that looks like a giant pizza. And what is on that farm is all the components to make pizza. You have a dairy section, you have a place that grows wheat for flour for pizza dough, you have pork for pepperoni and sausage, and then you have a herb garden for the oregano and tomatoes and mushrooms. And essentially, if you walk around a circular farm, you got to see all the components that went into the pizza they had in the restaurant. Maybe not the specific ingredients, but I thought it was a very creative way to teach kids about gardening and farming. I remember where I want to go next now. Here's the thing. how I know I'm not ever destined to be a gardener. At one point, we bought onions when we were living out in Sunnyvale. And one of the onions got forgotten in the refrigerator for a little bit too long, and it started sprouting. And it was a bright green sprout sticking out of the onion. And I said, I have a bright idea. I'm going to grow onions. So I took that onion, and I went out to the back of the house, and we had a little plot of dirt along the back near the lawn area that had some various plants in it. And I took a shovel, dug a hole, and stuck the would-be onion plant in the hole, covered it up with just the green onion bit sticking out, and I said, that'd be great. That'll be fine. I'll have onions in several months' time. Should have done the research. Because, well, for the first few weeks, I went out and took the water hose and watered that onion. I thought, things are great. The onion's still growing bigger. And I figured, okay, well, it's growing. And then one day it rained really hard, and I discovered that the dirt all around the onion plant had kind of gotten turned into mud, and my onion plant had fallen over. And it wasn't a good way to dry out the dirt. So I kind of straightened it up and added a stick to the side of it and sort of held it upright and hoped that the dirt would eventually solidify back into regular dirt. And it did. And every day I went out thinking, I think this onion plant is growing a little bit taller since the week before. Maybe I've salvaged this thing. And then the top started turning a little bit on the brown side. I said, oh, that's not good. So I tried adding a little bit more water, thinking maybe it just needs more water. The next week I went out, and the entire thing was gone. And I said, okay, that's different. I also noticed that the backyard lawn had been freshly mowed. And so I went next door, and I talked to the next door neighbor, who was also had been contracted out to be our sometime gardener. He'd mow the lawn once every month or two, occasionally 3 months. And I said, hey, did you pull up that onion plant in the plot of dirt there? He says, oh, is that what that was? He said, I thought it was a weed. And I couldn't figure out because it didn't match the rest of the plants, so I pulled it up and tossed it. And that was the last time I tried gardening.
That sounds like one of my experiences. There's a whole bunch of things connected with gardening. To our niece's house, who has a house in Washington State up on the big peninsula there, and she was showing us her garden, and she says, I just have one small problem, deer. She had this big barbed-wired fence, and the barbed wire went down to about 3 inches from the ground. And she said, you know, that the fawns figured out a way to spread their legs so they can get underneath that bottom barbed wire and devastate my garden. So she was looking for the next technique. So everything in the world is out to get your garden. I found that out. It's a major, major task to keep your garden from not being eaten, killed, burnt, flooded. What are the other things that can happen to it? And it's like, I just really take my hat off to farm. Jeff?
Well, lots of things can go wrong when you expose your garden to the elements. But at this point, we're at our break, so we'll be back with more Old Men stories in a little bit. See you in a few.
You're listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. Roland and Jeff will be right back with more of Old Men Stories after this short break.
This is Terry Willits, Mom Software, giving stability, service, and excellence.
Thank you, Terry, for the leadership at Mom Software and the noble example you set for all. From our home here in Silicon Valley, and from where it all started in San Francisco 35 years ago, we welcome you to Old Men Stories. continue listening to our radio presentation. We know you will hear a few wonderful stories that started from the home of Mom Software. www.momsoftware.com. One word, one S.
And we're back with more of Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You're invited to join the circle and share your comments and questions in our always open chat room at http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. That's http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. Now, let's give a warm welcome to our hosts, Roland and Jeff, as we continue today's storytelling journey.
Welcome back to the second half of Old Men Stories, the show on gardening. I have to say that my mom, at least, does do gardening stuff. And she is very well knowledgeable in plants and flowers and everything like that, because whenever we'd go somewhere, she'd stop and not quite literally smell the roses. Well, she did at one point, but I'll come back to that in a second. She would stop and identify plants growing on the side of the road. But she was also into geology, so she could identify rocks as well. My mom is definitely a perpetual student, but she actually maintained the garden in the back for a while after my grandmother passed away. And after we moved out of that place, the butcher shop owner said, "Oh yeah, yeah, I love those things, those melons in the back, and I keep them on." And then they sold to someone else, and I don't think they have it there anymore. I doubt it anyway. But regardless of which, she likes the place that she's in more or less these days, because she has the ability to grow stuff all around the house as opposed to just in the backyard. And so she definitely knows how to plant things. And she tried to get me to learn how to plant things, that she get me interested in the burpee seed catalog and say, "Well, what do you want to grow in the backyard this time around? Pumpkins or squashes or sunflowers?" And I just remember those things when I was a kid. The last story I want to tell can wait until after we have our special guest for today. So, Roland, you want to tell us about him?
Yes. Let's start the show. This is my friend, Bill Nelson. Take it away, Sharon.
Roland Willis, Old Men Stories. I'm here with my old buddy, Bill. We've been buddies
not quite
for
that
what?
Old,
what?
I said not quite that old, please.
Well, it's been a half century.
Okay.
Isn't that old enough? It's over a half century.
Okay.
For two people, that's a long time.
Yeah. Well, you got me talked into it.
Yes.
Okay, we're old friends.
We are old friends. And when did you? And our show this week is on gardening.
Pardon me?
It's on gardening.
Yes.
And we're going to. And you never gardened when I knew you.
That's right. Well, as I went out to seek my fortune, I began to understand that, you know, there's a bigger picture here as regards to what makes us tick and what makes the world go round. And so much of it revolves around the idea that we are what we eat, and that despite the fact that I acquired a lot of machinery and am working 150 acres, I take much greater pleasure in having a session with my young granddaughter, who, by the way, is graduating from high school, and teaching some lessons about nature and where food comes from. And so that she understands and realizes that, you know, in so many ways we're fortunate in being able to work with nature, but when we garden, we have that firsthand experience in experiencing nature.
That's really cool, Bill.
No.
And what did you plant this year?
Well, we plant, you know, what we like, and that ranges from tomatoes, of course, as always, beets, beans. We also put in sunflowers, and sunflowers are strictly to give back to nature. And we acquire the so-called Russian mammoths that we plant and have grow for the benefit of the birds in the fall to share in our labors. Other things include corn and lettuce. About everything that we would buy at the store, we are able to pick up in our backyard.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. What kind of corn do you plant?
Well, I've got field corn that is fed to animals. In our case, it's the goats who reproduce for us. And then there's also sweet corn that you either buy in a can in the store or you eat it off the cob.
And you eat it off the cob. You freeze it? You freeze it?
But you don't freeze it on the cob. You have to peel it off.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh.
You don't, it's not the same. You don't, take corn on the cob and process it and put it in the freezer. The taste is gone.
It doesn't work, huh?
No, it doesn't work that way. Most everything else you can.
Yeah.
And so, and you can enhance what's already there, too. So when we grow green peppers, we stuff them with a mixture of hamburger and rice. And we freeze them, and they make excellent snacks for popping in the microwave.
Whoa. So you do green peppers also.
Yep.
We have what you call onion
sets, and the onion sets are put into the ground. They're dormant, and they come alive. As we speak at this moment, we're in the midst of a rainstorm, and that rain will generate and percolate into the soil and make those seeds and dormant plants come alive.
That is really great. So dormant plants are basically, instead of seeds, you plant a dormant plant, right?
Right.
What is that? How do they get this? Do you grow them in clumps? When you have these multi-plant, you do a plant, it sort of grows in a huge clump and you take a part of it, save it for the next year, or what?
So we don't carry anything over. The only thing we really carry over are things that are perennial, and that would include asparagus. And that just comes up by itself. And we harvest that for about 6 weeks and let it go to seed. That is the most generous vegetable I can imagine. It just keeps coming, keeps on giving.
I heard it takes a while for them to begin, but then once they do, they just keep going and going and going.
Well, we're on our second year, and the roots came alive, and they're up 3 feet now.
3 feet?
And that's right, and we're going to let them grow until they overwinter, and then we're going to start cutting it next spring, beginning in May. And then, being out where you are living, you don't get everything. We, for example, cannot grow fruit trees because the soil is too heavy. We have tried that with apple trees, plum trees, and things, tree-type producers, and they won't produce.
Bill?
Yeah.
Okay. You can't do soil enhancement things?
You broke up. I didn't get that.
You can't do soil enhancement things like...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And our soil enhancement is strictly organic, where we put in, we turn to the soil manure and other crops, residue, like hay and things of that nature, and I'm able to work that in. It makes the soil more accepting for growth, retention of moisture, enhancing the mineral content of the soil, and that type of thing. So that is our practice, and so we know where our food is coming from.
And how often do you weed?
Weed?
Yes.
Is that what you asked?
Yes.
Oh, the principle for a good-sized garden is a rototiller. That is about the only, outside energy product that is used to disrupt the weeds. And so you do it about every week and a half to 2 weeks. And then eventually, with most of your garden produce, you weed one time before you're ready to take the bounty. So, for example, if you have green peppers, you will weed them one time. Right now I've got beets that will be coming up. You weed them one time before you're able to harvest them. And that, granted, I mean, that's work. But it's, the kind of work that affords a person a time to contemplate and to think about, the world, and a world that is really slowed down. And so it's not like you're meeting any deadlines. And so you're able to really grow in more than one way, just aside from the production of the food itself. You're able to grow personally and spiritually and so forth.
Wow. Reading, you created from a gardening thing a metaphysical positioning.
Yes, that's right.
I love
well,
it.
I'll tell you what, you evolve over time, and gardens are, in one part, will do that to you. It slows you up, and it tends to allow you to focus your life in a different way, commensurate with as you are getting older. And, I'm 73 years old right now, and, I feel I've had my best having a balance in life, including the garden.
Well, that is really nice. And, I went other directions. Gardening hasn't been one of them.
Yes. Well, you've been in the audiovisual, and I did go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I produced 77 30-minute videos for public distribution.
Yeah.
Over a 15-year period. And then I partnered with the local EPT, Twin City Public Television, our public television outlet, to create a documentary on a particular social problem.
Yeah, that was absolutely fair. You tell me that, I said, well, he's not going to get into this with me because he's already taken that journey. And I said, that's
right.
Great. Because I'm taking that journey right now.
Well, can I throw in a little commercial?
Yeah, throw in.
Okay. Anybody listening can watch this documentary, and the subject is prostitution and the consequences of trafficking of women and girls internationally in prostitution, and it can be viewed on your desktop, on your computer, by going into ppt.org and to go into Video Vault. This is a storage area that contains the entire documentary, and the documentary title is Prostitution, Beyond the Myths, M-Y-T-H-S. Beyond the Myths. And, as far as I know, they're going to hold it up there. They've featured it numerous times statewide, and there's been some international showing of this documentary. And it won 2 awards. So that was my crowning achievement in this realm.
Your intellectual gardening.
So I'm back to the garden now. Did I get as much joy in that garden as I did in making that documentary or any of these other audiovisual pieces?
Oh, wow, yes.
Yeah.
And you never know, you know, that might be one of my journeys somewhere along the line. You know?
Maybe. That's right.
Yes, everything is a process.
Seeing as how you're getting more and more famous with your audiovisual materials.
That's true. Thank God.
Somebody's gonna watch you and see you.
Yeah, we've had almost 11,000 hits. And all of our Omen stories run 127, 128, something like that. It's just spectacular.
Yes.
And what we're gardening for is everyone telling an old man story. They're old man stories. And men meaning human. So everyone, the lessons are there for you to learn, old man stories. Thank you, Bill.
You know, I think your listening audience might also reflect on the fact that the two of us, you know, are a little bit like the Bobbsey twins and went through in years earlier, a much more feisty kind of an existence in the boxing ring.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, other kind of rough and tough athletics. And so you might say we've kind of calmed down and gotten a little more focused and directed, you know, and pursuing, you know, more artful kinds of ways of expressing ourselves than with our fists.
That's
thought about that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah?
Yes, we have.
Yeah?
Yes, it is a journey that you process. And by the way, we never, Bill and I were the good guy fighters.
Yeah.
Right? Neither one of us were ever bullets.
Yeah.
And when we did it in the ring.
Yeah.
And we had people that we boxed against that had ample training.
yeah.
So that was our other type gardening, you know, where we garden our blood on the mat.
Well, I alluded to my granddaughter. I've had three grandchildren that have gone through the gardening experience and have proven to be extremely successful in life. And the one that's graduating right now has an incredible test scores and is practically has all of her tuition and bills paid for, you know, by merit. And that is owing to, well, I'm not going to say that it's all because she worked with me in the garden, but certainly the garden gave her that value to appreciate and to better herself. And that's my viewpoint anyway, and hers too, for that matter.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I haven't got anything to add to that except thank you so much, Bill. And we'll maybe see you in a few days on our journey through Minnesota.
Sure thing. And my pleasure.
This is Roland Willits and Bill Nelson with Old Men's Stories. Thank you.
All right. Always good to find someone who knows their stuff. Roland, do you want to tell us the second to last story or the last story?
We had a cherry tomato bush that we bought somewhere, and I just sort of planted it out in the garden. The next year, it came up, and it started setting up these vines, and it sent vines out all over. And I didn't do anything with it. I mean, it just grew. And it had, like, a bushel of little cherry tomatoes. And you'd pick them, and you'd pick them, and you'd pick them, and you'd pick them, and a bunch of them just sort of sat around and died. There were so many cherry tomatoes. Now that's like a gardening spirit. And the next year, because we let some of the things just sort of die there, you know, and go into the soil, we had three or four cherry tomato plants. And we had more. And we grew this. It must have been 10 years we had cherry tomatoes. Then for some reason, I think it was the molds. Then we took a bunch and we put them in our front yard. around the front. We put them up on the hill, and I think we're growing cherry tomatoes there still. It's nice when you get one of those plants that just does its job without you having to worry about it. I have rain that's hitting the top of the roof on my RV here, so it's probably interrupted a little of my voice.
Just a little bit. So tell you what, finish up, put yourself on mute, and I'll walk us out.
Okay.
All right. All right, Ashley, in every life, a little rain must fall, and Roland has been rained out. I want to know, have you ever heard the rain? Last story for the day has got to be, let's see, 25 years in the making. My grandmother on my dad's side passed away back in 1983, and my grandfather passed away in 1988. When he did, they sold the house, and all their stuff went away while I was at college. So my cousin got married last year, and she invited all of the cousins of our generation and put us all at the same table. And we hadn't seen each other since pretty much our family parted ways in a lot of ways, moved different coasts and things like that. So we all always live in the area until he passed. And we got to talking about all the things I remember about Grandma's house. And then one of our cousins pipes up, "I have Grandma's orange tree." And I said, "You mean that little tiny mandarin orange tree, the little pinky orange tree from the bathroom?" He said, "Yep, that's the one. It's sitting on the top shelf of my apartment in San Francisco, and it will not die." And we said, "How did you get that?" And I said, "Well, apparently his mom, my aunt, rescued it from the house on the very last day. And she said, I cannot take care of this. I will kill it if I keep it. I am FedExing it out to you. It is your responsibility to take care of. It is the very last plant from your grandmother's house, and you're in charge of it." So, sure enough, 2 days later, FedEx box shows up in the mail with his plant, with the roots wrapped in damp paper towel, and he plants it, and he puts it up on the shelf, and every now and again he remembers to water it. But he said, "You know what? You're right. That plant will not die." And sometimes I think it's kind of got the spirit of a grandmother watching over it, because all of the other plants hung on for quite some time after she passed as well, including the aloe vera plant that she would, every time you got a burn, rip off a leaf of it and jam it on the burn that you had, and it hurt because it was a piece of plant being jammed on a burn, but supposedly aloe vera was good for your burn, so it supposedly got better faster. But whenever I think about gardening, one of the things I always think about is that plant and that story. I have to say that gardening is definitely a labor of love. All you need is a little bit of dirt and the willingness to get your hands dirty and to water it and make sure it gets the plant food. But more often than not, it's a matter of paying attention to what the right conditions are. And just kind of talking about this stuff makes me want to think about maybe actually trying to grow some potted plants. Like, you know, those tomatoes that they have you can grow in your window, just so I can grow my own tomatoes and say that I have. Because this is California, where I live, and we have sun year-round, and all you have to do is just supply your own water. And heck, worst-case scenario, it can't be as bad as the onion. Anyhow, the only thing you recognize about not being a career gardener or farmer is that you don't grow your own food unless you give it a try yourself. And there are lots and lots of resources out there for growing houseplants, seeds, what have you. And it's a lot easier than it used to be. I actually got some plants for my office that lasted almost 2 weeks because they gave me the right amount of plant food and they had proper directions. And that was the thing about being a gardener when I was a kid. You kind of winged it. "Oh, look, the soil's dry. Throw water in it. It'll be fine." And then when it falls over or burns out, it's not so fine. The thing is that all plants die eventually, except orange plants and century plants and aloe vera plants and cacti. And weeds, of course. Definitely weeds. You cannot get rid of weeds, no matter how hard you try, because one of the other things I remember about my grandmother's backyard plot is that there were points where she put bits of recycled hefty trash bags over parts of the dirt in the garden just to keep the weeds from growing. But I will never, ever forget the 12 and 14 pound winter melon squash hanging from the back trellis. Because, well, being allergic to those things these days, I will definitely never want to see those again. And that's our show for today, everyone. Thank you for growing a little bit more with us. Hope you enjoyed the show. See you next week. More Old Man Stories. Look out for rain.
If you've got something in your hedgerow, what is it you grow? Are perennials in your future? Or is it herbs and vegetables to help you in the kitchen? Gardening is something that anyone with a bit of dirt to the name can do, but it is still a labor of love. What sort of gardening stories can you plot? Jeff Young,
Roland Willits,
Old Man Stories.
You've been listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. The story for the day may end here, but the adventure continues. Join us next time for another round of stories around the virtual campfire. Roland and Jeff want to hear what stories you have to share, too. Join the circle over at www.oldmenstories.org or send Roland and Jeff an email at oldmenstories@wq4d.net. That's oldmenstories@wq4d.net. And remember that you are already a master storyteller in your own right. We want to hear your story.